Support for this episode comes from PicMonkey.com. Now, once upon a time, photos only existed on paper, and if you wanted to edit them, you had to be a Russian spy or something. But now that we live in the digital photoverse, you can make everything look better with PicMonkey, an online photo editor. Design graphics, create collages, and take photos from meh to marvelous in just a click. Get a free trial of PicMonkey's premium subscription at PicMonkey.com/undisclosed. Hi, and welcome to a special holiday mini-episode edition of Undisclosed. My name is Rabia Chaudhry, and I'm joined with my colleagues Susan Simpson and Colin Miller. Now, I know many of you have been anxiously awaiting episode 7 of our podcast. Episode 7 is going to be a very important episode. You're going to be hearing from a lot of people you have never heard from before, and you're also going to be hearing information you've never heard from before. But having said that, Susan, Colin, and I, like most people, did need to take a little bit of time off to spend with family and friends over the holiday. And for that reason, we are going to be pushing episode 7 until next week. Now, before I go any further, let me wish our American listeners a very happy but belated 4th of July holiday, a very happy Independence Day. And to our listeners around the globe, please indulge us as we celebrate our independence. And we'll be getting back to our regular episodes starting next week, now that we have gotten some time off and feel refreshed. Originally, we were just going to make an announcement and say, sorry, we're skipping a week and we'll see you next week. But then we kind of felt bad. So we decided to put together something very quickly and answer questions that have been coming to us through Twitter and Facebook. And so hopefully this will tide you over for another week. And we'll start off with questions that Colin's going to answer.
This question comes from Michael. His Twitter handle is @D8, and he asks, how come everyone else's names are used except Mr. S and Mr. A? Why are their names not used? By way of review, Mr. S is the person who found Hay's body in Lincoln Park. Mr. A is the individual who saw a young African-American male acting suspiciously outside Lincoln Park. The reason we don't use their names is because we think that at best these people have a peripheral relation to this case, and so therefore we don't want to disclose their full names. That's also the case for a third person I'm about to mention. And so by way of context, between the discovery of Hay's body on February 9th and the arrest of Adnan on February 28th, we've discussed four people who have talked to the cops. Those people being, again, Mr. A, Mr. Graham, the athletic director at Woodlawn, Jen, and Jay. Well, it turns out there was actually a fifth person who talked to the cops between February 9th and February 28th, and that is a person we'll refer to as Mrs. S. And so I'm going to read to you the notes from the interview with Mrs. S. I'm going to do my best to read the handwriting in the report. You can compare what I say to the transcript we post on the website. Interview with Mrs. S. 2/15/99/2045 with Hagen, Baltimore County, Woodlawn. Daughter goes to Woodlawn. Her daughter is a senior, 18 years old. God let her know the girl was dead and in Lincoln Park. Had a vision, two men in a car. Only saw the passenger from the waist down. New pants, Tim's, meaning Timberland's. Driver, tall, slim, 18 or 19, dreads, thin mustache, tan jeans, Tim's, has a son, taking certain meds. I can't read the first one. I think the second one was calcium pills. Had vision last week while praying in afternoon. Does not know what day. No history of mental illness. Saw on news. Doesn't know what day. So the question here is, what do we make of this interview? You might just write it off and say she had a vision while praying. It's meaningless. On the other hand, Some of the details in the interview actually match up pretty well with at least some versions of the events that we have in this case. And so we know in this case that Jen said on January 13th, when they were dumping clothes in the dumpster, some of the clothes were a pair of fake Timberlands. We know that Adnan actually had a pair of Timberlands that were recovered from his house. Jay said he was wearing tan jeans on January 13th. Jay is tall and slim, and he was 18 or 19. We know that Adnan had a thin mustache. And so again, many of these facts match up. Some don't. She mentions one of the people in the car having dreadlocks, and we have no indication of anyone with dreadlocks in this case. And so again, it's tough to say what relevance to draw. They talked to the daughter. She said she had no knowledge, just like neighbor boy said he had no knowledge of being shown Hayes' body in the trunk. You might just write this off and say, this woman had a vision while praying. It means nothing. On the other hand, you might say, her daughter was at Woodlawn. She heard something from someone, we don't know who. And that person is relaying events that eventually, in some way, become part of the narrative of this case.
Our next question comes from Twitter user at mmfull, who writes, wasn't there also a receipt that she stopped to buy something on the 13th? What the question's referring to is a bank charge from Hay's bank statements that was dated 1/13/99, the same day that Hay went missing. There was also a receipt found in Hay's car after it was recovered by the police, but the date on the receipt was illegible. However, both the receipt and the bank statement show that the purchase was made at the same gas station off of Old Harford Road, kind of on the way from Hay's house to Dawn's house. At trial, Gutierrez argued that this purchase had been made on January 14, 1999, and therefore was proof that someone was using Hay's debit card after her death and disappearance on the 13th. It's not clear where she got this January 14th date from or what she was talking about. The prosecution, however, argued that this charge was made on the 13th, but in the very early morning hours, shortly after 12 a.m., while Hay was driving back from Dawn's house to her place after their date on the evening of the 12th. Both sides were wrong. Neither the prosecution nor the defense had taken time to actually look at the bank statements and to figure out what was going on. Although the date posted for this purchase was dated as January 13th, 1999, the actual transaction date, which is also shown in the bank records in a separate column, shows that the purchase had actually taken place on January 11, 1999. Therefore, it was made 2 days before Hay's murder and had nothing to do with the crime whatsoever.
Okay, one question that has been asked repeatedly is about whether or not Adnan will appear on the Undisclosed podcast and why he hasn't already, the way he did with Serial. So there's a bit of a backstory to that. And what happened was that, it could be very well that Sarah did not realize it, because for many years I didn't realize this either. But when Adnan calls you, there is a recording that, you know, we all heard in the beginning of Serial, that you have a call from an inmate. Part of that recording says that you are not allowed to record any of this call. And honestly, over all of these years, I kind of never paid attention to that. When I hear that it's Adnan calling, I just wait for the right time and I, you know, press 9 so I can talk to him. And I just never heard it, really, even though it comes on every single time. It could be Sarah didn't hear it either, but, Sarah did record a lot of their calls. A lot of it happened before Serial. So as she was playing this stuff over the course of the show, I guess somebody at the state was like, wait a minute, these calls are not supposed to be recorded. So somebody at the state let them know at the prison that Adnan was making phone calls that were getting recorded. And so they took away his phone privileges for a little bit because of that. This was sometime, I think, in November, December. And, I don't know if he even knew that it was not supposed to be recorded or what have you. But the point is that, now that the state is paying attention and, you know, I certainly don't want him to be punished for something like that. I'm not very inclined to do that in the future because I just don't want him to lose his phone privileges, you know, because that's the only time he has to talk to family and his lawyers and stuff. So that's why we haven't heard from Adnan. You can thank the state of Maryland for that. And, you know, hopefully we'll hear from him when he is actually home.
This question comes from Dre Spencer. Her Twitter handle is @discodedre74. She asks, is the murderer mentioned in latest episode, across street from ATM, the same murderer mentioned in last Serial episode? Dre is talking about that final episode of Serial in which Deidre from the Innocence Project is setting forth possible alternate suspects in the death of Haman Lee. And the answer is no, it's not the same person. So Deidre was talking about Ronald Lee Moore. Ronald Lee Moore was a Baltimore resident. He actually lived pretty close to where Jay lived back in 1999. He also served a prison term in the same prison at the same time as Mr. S, the person who found Hayes' body in Lincoln Park. Ronald Lee Moore was released from prison on January 1st, 1999, so exactly 13 days before the disappearance of Haman Lee. Later in 1999, in December, Ronald Lee Moore killed Annalise Lee in her apartment. So Annalise Lee was a 27-year-old, and she was found strangled to death and with blunt force trauma to her head. So for drawing comparisons, both Annalise and Hay Lee were Asian American. Both of them were strangled to death. Both had blunt force trauma to the head. The person we mentioned in the prior episode of Undisclosed was Roy Davis. And Roy Davis was also a Baltimore resident. As we noted, he lived basically across the street from the ATM that he had used in the past. This ATM was between Woodlawn High School and the school attended by Hayes' cousin. Prior to 1999, although it wasn't known at the time, in May 1998, Roy Davis killed Jada Lambert. Jada Lambert was a Woodlawn student. She was 18 years old. She was fatally strangled, and her body was dumped in a park. So again, drawing those comparisons, both Jada Lambert and Hay Lee were 18 years old. They were both Woodlawn students. They were both strangled, and they were both dumped in a park. Roy Davis, interestingly enough, is currently in the same prison as Adnan. So this takes us back to the Innocence Project then. As noted, the Innocence Project down the road might petition for DNA testing. Question is, would DNA testing pull up a profile that belongs to Ronald Lee Moore or Roy Davis? Possibly. If we look at serial killers generally, the most popular method of killing by serial killers is, in fact, manual strangulation. On the other hand, both Ronald Lee Moore and Roy Davis sexually assaulted their victims. And at least at this point, it's unclear whether Haman Lee was sexually assaulted. We do know they did a perk on her, a physical evidence recovery kit, but they never tested the DNA from that kit. And so assuming down the road that kit is tested, the question is, will it pull back the profile for Moore or Davis? Certainly seems these are viable candidates as the person who killed Haley.
Now I have a question that comes to us through Facebook, and it is from somebody named Samantha L. I will not say the last name. And Samantha writes, "Hi, we're all gripped here in the UK too. I have only just come across Jay's Intercept interview and wondered what you guys have to say about it. Jay seems so sure Adnan came by his house late at night and popped the trunk. Has all that now been disproved by the new autopsy opinions? Thanks, Sam." Now, if you recall in an earlier episode, we talked about the medical evidence, specifically the autopsy report, which seems fairly indisputable in that it shows us that after Hay was killed, her body was positioned so that she was face down flat for at least about 10 hours in that temperature, in the cold temperature. Some people might say 8, but most experts we've consulted said that the colder the temperature, the longer it takes for lividity to fix. And lividity, again, is the pattern of the blood where it pools in a body after death, and it becomes fixed and can't be moved after a certain time. So if we are to assume that Hay was killed after school and she was put in a trunk immediately, and we are going to assume that she was in a trunk on her side, And then she was left there until midnight, which is when Jay now says the trunk pop happened. Then the lividity would have had to been on the side that her body was resting on. It would not have been on her front, which is where it was, her anterior. Unless you're going to make the argument that she was in the trunk of her own car, which had a very small trunk, face down, flat. And that is a very difficult argument to make. So I think it's clear that even though Jay is changing his story for whatever reason, that it still is not supported by the autopsy evidence. Not in my estimation, at least. We still would not find the lividity pattern that the autopsy report clearly shows if Jay's new story was true.
Our next question comes from Gregory Hancock, whose Twitter handle is Gregory R. Hancock. He writes, were Hayes' stomach contents still analyzable at autopsy? Any sign of hot fries? And yes, the autopsy report found that the stomach contents contained 40 milliliters of mucoid and tan fluid containing fine white particles. This indicates that Hay had not eaten within approximately 2 to 6 hours of her death. This calls into question Inez Butler's testimony and police statements in which she said that just before leaving school on January 13th, Hay picked up a bag of hot fries. The hot fries were not found in Hay's car, and since it does not appear she could have eaten them after leaving school, the autopsy report provides further support that Inez Butler had not been thinking of the correct day or the correct time in which she last saw Hay prior to her death.
The biggest thing that it always stuck out in my mind, and I guess why I could never accept Adnan could have possibly been involved, was just like his reactions to knowing that she was dead.
A number of listeners have asked the question about why they haven't heard about how Adnan responded to Hayes' death and disappearance, and that it really wasn't talked about in Serial, and it seems like they haven't gotten any expression from him. So I thought I would reach back into some of the documents that we have and try to address that question. I mean, of course, it's important to understand that, you know, Sarah had, I think, between 40 and 50 hours of conversation with Adnan, and we heard a very small portion of that in Serial. So I'm going to pull right now from a statement that was taken from one of his classmates. And this is taken from Becky. The statement was taken on April 9th, 1999, and it was given to police. And she says that apparently, and it's, I'm going to try to read it, but it's like in short little, it's not even in complete sentences. But anyhow, the defendant, which is how the police referred to him, and these are notes taken by the police, defendant didn't do any work in psychology. It was uncommon for him not to do anything before he had been doing everything. Defendant would cry a lot whenever with defendant, meaning whenever she was with defendant Becky and with other friends. Defendant would see photo of victim and start crying, said he started praying for her. And that Becky saw defendant crying in early February. He came to her house along with other students, Krista, Aisha, Sean, Aisha's boyfriend. And they planned to go on dinner, and they called Adnan, talked to him on the phone, and invited him. So defendant was at friend's house in Howard County. He said he would come to my house. We would drive to Krista's house. He came and picked me up and went to Krista's. Krista took us all to dinner in bedroom after dinner, looking at photos of Hay, saw him getting teary-eyed. We left. He drove me home. And that was shortly after her body had been found. It also says that after they found her, he would get upset. The night before his arrest, he and I went to Krista's house. Aisha and her boyfriend there sat around, talked, listened to music. For about an hour, he drove me home. We talked about it. He was quiet when we got in the car. He said he needed people to talk to because some people really didn't listen. Now, in a statement taken by Gutierrez's private investigator in March of 1999, March 12th, he took the statement from Stephanie. Now, March 12th was important because it was the day that the school had a memorial for Haley. And Adnan had been instrumental in helping plan that memorial. There was a committee. He was on that committee. We know that from a lot of different statements and also his own handwritten notes. And he was in charge of finding the tree that they were going to plant and getting the plaque. And he had gone and gotten quotes and those things. But he was arrested before the memorial took place, so he wasn't able to actually attend it. The private investigator went to Stephanie's to talk to Stephanie at the memorial, and she said, during the entire time, these are notes from the private investigator. During the entire time Ms. Stephanie knew Adnan, she advised that he never got upset or mad about anything or showed any physical display of anger. Stephanie had never heard any information in school about Adnan being responsible for murdering Hay until the police charged him. Again, she stated that she never saw any changes in Adnan. We also have police notes from an interview with Jawan, who was a friend of Adnan's and went to school with him, and also knew Hay. And part of those notes read that found out that morning, assuming that on the morning that the Adnan and other students found out that Hay's body had been found, defendant in nurse's office, went to go see him. First, he was in denial. Then at nurse's office, he broke down, but I wasn't in there. We left the school, went to Peter's house, me, Peter, Imran, Adnan, parents not home. Defendant went downstairs by himself, but was crying in corner. Thought he needed to be by himself. People came to house. He said he probably wouldn't have broken down if not for the nurse. She shook him and made him realize it was her. It seems that initially when Hay disappeared, and this is another question that's asked a lot, and people are kind of surprised actually because they don't understand why everybody wasn't panicked. But initially when Hay disappeared, for the first at least week, students were not that concerned. Nobody was that concerned. They thought she was with her new boyfriend. They knew she had trouble at home. School was out for a number of days because of the weather, and then because of Ramadan and the end of Ramadan, some of the Muslim kids missed more school. So they kind of didn't really realize what was going on. Later, after about a week or so, I think it seems people started getting a little more concerned. And then after her body was found, it seems clear from other student statements that many people did witness Adnan crying a number of times, and he was helping to prepare with her memorial. But as we know, he never made it to that memorial because on the morning of February 28th, he was arrested. And he was taken down to booking in Baltimore City, and he was never to return home again. Thank you so much for your questions, your comments, your suggestions. Our audience is tremendous, and your engagement with us online has been amazing. We get so many messages through Facebook and Twitter, and I am personally floored with the level of investment that people have in this case, and I'm so thankful for it. I'm thankful that there are millions of people who want to know what really happened to Haymon Lee on January 13th, 1999, and who want justice for both her and for Adnan. So, join us next week when we turn to our regular episodes. And in episode 7, we explore what happened when Adnan Syed was finally arrested. A special thanks to Ramiro Marquez for our theme music and photography, to Christy Williams for our website, to Baluki, who designed our logo, and to Amar Naji, our sound editor. Our executive producer is Dennis Robinson. You can find us online on social media on Facebook and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @undisclosedpod. Tweet us your questions and comments using the hashtag undisclosed. Do you own a car? Then you know how expensive it is.
From a recent AAA study, your car costs you $9,000 a year. Ouch. But what if your car paid you instead? Enter Relay Rides. Relay Rides is a peer-to-peer car rental company. You can rent out your car on Relay Rides and earn as much as $1,000 a month. Relay Rides pre-screens each renter and offers $1 million insurance. A special offer for undisclosed listeners. Earn an extra $100 when you sign up today for free at relayrides.com/undisclosed.
The Undisclosed Podcast is brought to you in part by the Adnan Syed Trust, a legal defense fund that helps to pay Adnan's legal fees and associated investigative efforts. All proceeds raised through advertising on today's episode of Undisclosed were given to the trust. To learn more about the trust and to donate to our efforts to free Adnan, please visit www.launchgood.com/freeAdnan.